everyone. This is Dr. Cheryl Selman, and welcome to What Women Must Know. Thank you for joining me again for another in-depth conversation about topics and information that you really must know. And as you know, if you've been listening to my show, this is all about empowering you with truthful information so you can make those really informed decisions. And as always, if you are new to the show, please go and visit me at my website, whatwomenmustknow.com, because I have these great free special reports. You'll also be able to get archived shows that I've been doing. And if you go over to my Facebook page, What Women Must Know, I post great information on a daily basis. So it's keeping you up to date with the latest information that is so important for your health and well-being. Today, we're going to be talking about another topic that is really, really important for your health and well-being, and we're going to be talking about how to clean up the chemical mess in our bodies. My guest today is Dr. Ali Cohn, who is going to be sharing with us her passion about the levels of chemical toxicity that we are exposed to, the impact that it has on our health, and most importantly, what we're going to do about it. So just let me take a moment and introduce my guest to everyone. Dr. Ali Cohn is a board-certified rheumatologist, integrative medicine specialist, and environmental health expert specializing in arthritis, immune system disorders, and women's health issues. She received her medical training at Hahnemann University Hospital School of Medicine in Philadelphia and completed her internship and residency in internal medicine at Beth Israel Medical Center in New York City. Dr. Cohn continued her specialist training in rheumatology and autoimmune diseases at Montefiore Hospital, Albert Einstein University Hospital. And Dr. Cohn is currently in private practice in Monroe Township, New Jersey. Her practice that she founded in 2011, Integrative Rheumatology Associates, focuses on traditional Western medical management of rheumatologic ailments as well as integrative options for total wellness, such as biofeedback, acupuncture, cognitive therapy, diet and exercise counseling, environmental toxin counseling, smoking cessation, stress management, and sleep evaluations. Dr. Cohn's strong interest and work in the area of environmental chemical exposure and health led her to a collaboration with the Environmental Working Group to create a CME-accredited presentation on endocrine-disrupting chemicals and their relationship to human health, designed specifically for physicians, nurses, and other health professionals. She lectures nationally on this topic to communities, academic institutions, and medical schools. She has been a consultant for major corporations such as Knowledge University to help reduce the chemical exposure of infants and toddlers in over 2,000 kindercare daycares across the United States. Her book, The Smart Human's Essential Guide to Living Healthy in a Chemical World, is due for release this fall. And she is also co-editing Integrative Environmental Health Text for her for the Weill Oxford University Press Academic Book Series. She was awarded the 2015 New Jersey Healthcare Heroes Award for Education in June. And, wow, let me just take a breath here. it's such a pleasure to have Dr. Ali Cohn, a woman with a mission and a passion. So, yeah. Ali, welcome to the show today.
Great. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, it's a really big topic, isn't it, what's happening to our environment? We have to remember that never in the history of humanity have we been exposed to so many chemicals in such a continuous, manner in such a short period of time. So I know this is a passion of yours. Why don't we just jump in? Tell us just what is the state of our chemical exposure? Let's start there.
Well, I was an anthropology minor when I was in college, and it really did shape the way I looked at medicine and health. And I think we really get away from that in today's society. And one of the things we have to think about is really, we've been evolving as human beings and Homo sapiens for over 4.5 million years. And during that time, we've learned to manage different threats to our health, including, changes in, whether it's temperature or moving for different food sources. And it's taken a while to establish changes that will allow us to live and prosper. we have now, over the last almost maybe 150 to 200 years, created more chemicals and more synthetic substances around our body that we eat, that we breathe, that we put on our skin, that have never been in our evolution. And we therefore don't have this perspective. We don't have this way of figuring out our bodies over time, how to handle those chemicals. And from my experience, it's really showing, that we have a problem because we're not able to handle such a load, and our bodies are therefore weakening, having increased rates of a whole host of diseases and other syndromes. So I think we really need to step back in order to, look at our past and realize where we are now and in the future for our health, just in relationship to what's changed in our environment.
You know, I want to say that I do nutrigenomic testing. So I look at the genome level of people, what people have inherited, and mm-hmm. how they are able to manage inflammation, oxidative stress, and also detoxification pathways. And I have to say, from working with hundreds of people, it's not looking good. You know, we just don't have the inherited capacity to really deal with the toxic world. So I see it as, an impact on their health risks, how they age, and all the chronic illnesses that are showing up now. So
right.
It's a big concern. So we need to be aware of how serious this problem is, and then what we can do. And
correct.
There are things we can do, and that make a big difference. So, as someone who's specializing with, environmental chemical exposure, with the estrogen disrupting chemicals, with autoimmune conditions, and of course your specialty is rheumatology. But how does all that come together? How are all these things affecting
sure.
our health?
So, what we're finding here is if you go back to certain cases in our history, we know that certain chemicals, certain outside sources can actually turn the immune system on to actually cause an autoimmune process where the body's own immune system really attacks itself, not just protecting it evolutionarily, just from the world around it in terms of any kind of pathogens and infections. So what we're seeing is not just an autoimmune response, which of course is happening. We have, increased rates of lupus, I think 16,000 new cases per year. Rheumatoid arthritis is now, 1% of the population in the United States. And around the world has rheumatoid arthritis. So we have increasing rates of autoimmune diseases. We also have increasing rates of endocrine disorders, so thyroid disease, thyroid cancers, other endocrine cancers, including of the gynecologic, type in terms of endometrial cancer, cervical cancers. We have increased rates of testicular cancer, which is enormous. And what's so interesting about testicular cancer is that this is typically, you would think most cancers are a result of living on Earth and having it as an older man's disease. But in fact, we're seeing younger people getting testicular cancer at an enormously, alarming rate, really. So what's happening is our systems, like the endocrine system, which is very vulnerable and very, very fragile and works in a very meticulous way with messaging, we now have these chemicals that are actually mimicking estrogen at a very, very low level, and they work on the level of parts per billion and parts per trillion, so just very, very tiny amounts of some chemicals, not all chemicals, but some chemicals that we have tested, such as bisphenol A, flame-retardant chemicals, many of the pesticide chemicals, some of the plasticizers like PBDE, phthalates. These chemicals have been known to cause endocrine disruption and changes. The unique thing about endocrine system in the human body is that it's connected to other systems, such as the immune system. It's connected to issues of cancers. And we know that inflammation, when it's disrupted and the body is inflamed, leads to a whole source of a whole bunch of other issues, including cancers. So everything's tied together. We can't really take systems apart. We really want to think about the body in a holistic way, where when you affect one thing, you can have sort of. So that's what we need to keep in mind when we're thinking about these chemicals and what harm they can cause, we really want to think about prevention is your primary goal in, you know, avoiding some of these chemicals, which we can do on a day-to-day basis if people, you know, make very simple changes.
You know, one of the questions I have, and I'm sure a lot of people have thought about this, we know that exposure to toxins is a bad thing, that it compromises our health, it underlies many chronic illnesses, but I don't know if people really understand the mechanism of that.
Mm-hmm.
How is exposure to a chemical, you know, you mentioned bisphenol A, which is a chemical found in plastic water bottles, it's found in lining of tin cans, it's found in dental sealants, and most people may not be aware of it. It's also found in the receipts you get at the supermarket,
mm-hmm.
which is a really serious problem. But I think it would be of value to help people understand, how does an exposure to a chemical, what happens when it gets into the body, and why is it that it can be so damaging to our health?
So that's a great question. So really, what toxicologists have really given us over the years, really since Paracelsus back in, you know, in a couple of centuries ago at least, is that, you know, we used to believe that dose makes the poison, meaning the amount of exposure that one, you know, undergoes to a particular, you know, toxin, so to speak, would determine how much of a risk or how likely that person would be to get a result, a resulting health implication from that exposure. So, you know, really the more you're exposed, the greater the likelihood. But what we're finding out now is that toxicology is really being turned on its head, because the way these endocrine chemicals, endocrine disrupting chemicals or EDCs work, is that at very, very low levels. So as I mentioned, parts per million, parts per trillion. Think of one drop of water in 20 Olympic-sized swimming pools. Levels that small have this exponential signaling effect in the human body. And this has come over time. Through anthropology, we've learned to conserve a lot of our biochemical processes in order to be able to survive. And what we see now is that many of these chemicals act just like the hormones in our body and take the place of the hormones in our body. So they sometimes turn on processes, you know, affecting the thyroid in terms of increasing thyroid chemical production or reducing the chemical production. We see changes in embryogenesis in terms of children being, you know, the fetus. We see changes in terms of the androgens or the sex hormones and development of problems when children are born in terms of whether testes have dropped or malformation of, you know, genitalia. So there's a whole host of situations that can occur when just a very, very small dose of an endocrine disruptor takes place. Now, that being said, it's not, I don't want to say this to freak everybody out, and, you know, we have to really think about how this comes into play on a day-to-day basis. What we see is, over time, low-dose exposures over time cause increasing risk. So in other words, things that don't necessarily bother you, like exposures to various chemicals that we drink from, as you mentioned, cans, you know, cooking in plastics, holding receipts that have bisphenol A on the top so that it seals the ink that gets printed on them. You know, we can't avoid everything in terms of every exposure that we have. It's just not what modern day has for us to enjoy. But what I can say is that we're finding that when you have more and more exposures, the risk should typically goes up in terms of what problems people may encounter. Now, of course, everyone's genetics are different, and really health and disease is dependent upon not only exposures, but really our genes and our epigenome, which are the proteins that either allow a gene to be expressed or keep a gene quiet. So not every gene that we're given will get expressed. And so really it's a very fine dance between our environment and our genetic makeup, and that's really what will determine whether we have health-related issues from exposures. So my message and what I do through thesmarthuman.com, which is my website, and the work I'm doing in education, is to really give people an idea that there's no direct cause and effect, But what we need to do is let's be precautionary and use the precautionary principle in our day-to-day lives and avoid things that we know, avoid chemicals and certain exposures that we know may cause problems either now or down the line, and therefore just simply make simple changes that are practical so that we can actually move forward and just really start cleaning up our behaviors.
Well, you know, it's so ubiquitous, and, you know, there's that famous study that looked at the cord blood of infants and what they found, what, 279 something, I don't know.
Chemicals in cord blood
Yeah, that baby's swimming around in the womb in chemicals.
Yep.
And I've actually written about the whole area of concern. It's quite epidemic of precocious puberty, 1 out of 6 8-year-olds going into puberty, which is definitely driven by these endocrine disrupting chemicals and early exposure. So, well, you know, we see aberrations happening before our very eyes, and we often miss it because it's so invisible, right? Often you can't see it, smell it, touch it, feel it. You just have to become aware and educated to what's really going on. So what are your top recommendations for people to be doing?
Sure. So one of the top recommendations I have is simply to, number one, start surveying your life and surveying your body. Because I think when you try to do too many actions without understanding what you're doing, you sort of don't buy into it. You don't own what you're doing overall. So think about what touches your body on a day-to-day basis, whether it's plastics, whether it's just perfume and shampoo and conditioner and body lotion, deodorant, antiperspirant, which has some issues for a separate time. But essentially, we want to think about, you know, a survey of the body. So what do you breathe in? What can you avoid or change in your home or workplace that will change the composition of the air you breathe, which is the most direct way into the human body, is through inhalation, aside from IV infusion, of course. What do you put on your skin? And do you, you know, are you able to wash off any chemical solvents or any hobby chemicals? People do a lot of crafting with chemicals that are very strong. In your workplace, are you adequately protected from the environment that you work in terms of either chemical solutions or cleaning products, or is there enough air filtration in your workspace? And also think about what you're eating. In terms of what's the quality of your food in terms of chemicals, coloring, food additives. So really start with a survey and really think about what it is that you can really take away. And most people would argue that a lot of the chemicals we put in on and around our body may not be necessary and there are better choices. The next question I would ask, you know, people to think about is in terms of the food you eat, what are the containers that you're getting your food from and what are the containers that you're putting food in to heat up? Because a lot of times when you heat something up to a high temperature, you're breaking down the matrix, the composition of that material, and it can leak into the food and to the drink that you're drinking. And so think about, you know, how you handle food, not only what you choose for food, but how you handle it in order to eat it. There are also wonderful choices on how to make, or I should say many ways to make better choices when it comes to personal care products. I've worked with the Environmental Working Group for several years. They have a wonderful website, which is ewg.org, and also a wonderful app, a phone app that's free that you can type in your personal care products, such as, you know, nail polishes and, you know, different brands that you use, and they have done the best they can to seek out the ingredients for many of these everyday personal care products. And they also allow you to see what it is they're concerned about, but also what are the better choices that are available. So there's a whole host of ways to really, one by one, peel away some of the more chemical-laden, personal care products and foods and really replace them. One thing to keep in mind about personal care products is many of them have what's called fragrance or perfume or parfum in the ingredient list. And the issue, and this goes back to sort of the, you know, the issues with our legislation and what we're in, why we're in this pickle is because of our lack of legislation and testing for these products before they go to market in terms of safety for young children and human health. But perfume and fragrance are actually proprietary, meaning the companies have no legal obligation to reveal the ingredients of those substances. And so therefore, you really do get products that can have hundreds of chemicals that you'll never know the name of, and often give people issues with skin irritation, allergy reactions, and perhaps more issues, because skin is also very absorbent and our bodies are very sponge-like. So the hypocrisy in my world as a physician is people want drugs perhaps or need drugs perhaps that go through the skin, and yet we don't really think twice about the drugs or the chemicals that come from all over the world that are in personal care products and really can cause some harm as well.
So can you give us some really shocking statistics or, you know, information that really makes people pay attention to why they want organic skincare products, organic,
yeah,
you know, household products, organic foods. So you want to purify your air, your water. Give
sure.
us, you know, tell us something that's really going to make people wake up.
Well,
to the
yeah, sure.
Of this.
Well, let
yeah.
me start just by giving you a quick couple of where we sit with chemicals in this country. So every day the U.S. imports into this country 42 million pounds of synthetic chemicals every day. About 1,000 new chemicals are brought onto the market. 800 of these chemicals are likely endocrine-disrupting chemicals. Only 5 chemicals in this country have ever been taken off the market in about 40 years, since 1976. And even asbestos, which is one of those chemicals, was really only taken off the list of certain uses. But essentially, we can't even get asbestos, which we know is carcinogenic, off of the to-use list in this country, whereas Europe has over 1,200 chemicals that they have banned for use in the European Union. So, you know, we have a real debacle here legislatively, and because there's no protection, we have over 84,000 chemicals that are commercially available for use in a whole bunch of products, including personal care products, that have never been tested for safety. For safety in children, for safety for humans, in reproductive development. And so we really have a debacle in the fact that no one's really protecting us, and we are assuming that these products on the shelves at all our favorite stores are really good for us, or at least not going to harm us. But in fact, we really have to do our own vetting when it comes to these chemicals. Now, I really believe, because of the overwhelming rise in various issues, the health issues, you know, we have high rates of autism, we have high rates of ADHD, we have high rates of endocrine disrupting chemical related diseases such as endocrine disorders, autoimmune disease. You know, that has really come about over the last several, maybe 200 years, maybe 100 to 200 years, we have such rises in these areas of health. And I think we really need to think about what is the coinciding rise, and is our environment really the primary issue? If we believe that that's the case, then we should really move towards making personal changes. So to keep in mind, there's, you know, those are some of the minor statistics, but at least people will understand why it's their job personally to be more proactive in terms of making changes to their environment. You know, as I mentioned, it really only takes 1 to 2 parts per million and 1 to 2 parts per billion to really be in our bloodstream. I'll give you an example. For instance, Paxil, which is an everyday medication, or Cialis. Paxil, you only need 30 parts per billion to reach a steady state in our body so that it works. Or Cialis, 30 parts per billion. We know mercury at 15 parts per billion and lead at 50 parts per billion already causes neurotoxicity. So you can see very small amounts of chemicals can have a whole variety. You know, it reaches into our body and it's doing its job as a medicine, but perhaps as a chemical, we don't necessarily want these things, such as BPA and certain phthalates. So it's really up to us to really move towards getting rid of these things if we can. And yes, we're all going to be toxic at some level. There's no way to become perfectly clean, but we want to move towards cleaner products, such as cleaning products using baking soda and vinegar and lemon and Castile soap and borax and things that have a very low toxicity level, you know, and remove things that super clean our house, like antimicrobial chemicals, triclosan, Bactroban, Microban, and get away from this ultra clean marketing that we've been fed for many, many years, which is actually really disrupting our environment and not helping our environment.
You know, it's such important advice. You know, I've done as much as I can do in my space. I have an air purifier, I have a water purifier. Everything I cook is purified water. I've got a filter on my shower. You know, I do as much organic as possible. And I think, you know, this is a really powerful message that I want people to understand, because when we look at what's happening in our world, when we look at the growing incidence of cancers, you know, I kind of know 3-4 people in the last week just been diagnosed with cancer, right? We see you in your world with autoimmune diseases, which is part of what's driving most chronic illnesses anyway. People need to understand that these are conditions that are exacerbated, if not caused, from our body's inability to handle toxic exposure. It's not a genetic thing. You know, cancers are not genetic. They are caused, and I think the National Institute of Health even acknowledges that just a small percentage, less than 10% of all cancers, are caused from any genetic predisposition.
Certainly for breast
cancer.
Yeah, right? Certainly for breast cancer, that's an absolutely correct statistic that 10% are really genetically related breast cancers, and 90% is our environment. And actually 75% of most chronic illnesses can be are really based on our environment. And that really includes, in a big way, our diet. And to take it to the next level, what are we doing in terms of our diet that's either promoting illness or taking away illness, especially in relationship to the environment? And it's a really important area, because not only are we eating a lot of junk that has a lot of chemicals, and we can take those away hopefully with change, but we're also not getting the nutrients that we need to actually help fight and battle sort of the environmental chemicals that are coming into our lives. So there is a whole world of foods that actually can really promote detoxing. And that's a really important area, such as what supplements. You know, of course, food is better than supplements, but supplements are usually at a higher level of concentration. Can we take to, you know, not just avoid chemicals, but sort of bind them, block them, and escort them out of the body? And that's actually become a really big issue for me in my practice and what I'm doing in terms of a personalized detoxification with patients. And it is personalized, because not everyone has the same diet, not everyone has the same genetics. And I think we really have to think about individually what are our health-related issues, and how do you gear sort of a detoxification program towards someone individually. But in terms of food, quercetin is in apples and leeks and onions. It's right under the skin of apples. It's in kale. It's in broccoli. So quercetin, which is a wonderful substance, it's really an antioxidant, is fabulous for helping to bind methylmercury and some other heavy metals in lab studies. So we have these available studies, but we have to extrapolate them a little bit to humans, because no one's running these studies, and we have to really think about whether or not we can get them directly from food and the quality of our food, so that we can really avoid having to take supplements and anything, you know, outside of a diet.
So can you give us, I understand, you know, as a functional medicine practitioner, you're working in a very individualized way, which, you know, I do as well, but can you give us like your, you know, top favorite supplements that are necessary to help most of us thrive in this toxic world? Can you get some?
Sure.
You know,
I think that's a great way to start. And I'm currently not at functional medicine. I'm integrative. Functional is also a very unique area of medicine that I think you're involved with. But essentially, they come down to the same major philosophies, and so I'm on board with that. My top three, in terms of avoidance and prevention is number one, but in terms of supplements, you know, really you want to make sure that you're getting enough of these nutrients from clean, non-pesticide laden vegetables and fruits. And it doesn't always have to be organic. I want to stress that. Organic is certainly great because it's doing the work for you as a farmer. But, you know, really there are many fruits and vegetables, which you can find from EWG.org on the Dirty Dozen Clean 15 list, which talks about different conventional fruits and vegetables that are non-organic that you can buy that have the least amount or most amount of pesticides known when they're grown. So, you know, certain fruits and vegetables you want to stay away from, that's the Dirty Dozen, and then the Clean 15 are the ones that you can buy conventionally without major pesticide laden in activity. And certainly you can, fruits and vegetables can all be washed with white wine vinegar and warm water. So there's a really good benefit to washing fruits and vegetables. But in terms of, you know, supplements, I'm a big fan of making sure everyone is really adequately covered for vitamin D, which is a big problem in this country in terms of vitamin D deficiency. Vitamin D is very, very important in a whole host of biochemical activities in our body, certainly cardiac disease prevention, wonderful for certain cancers, colon cancer studies showing prevention, certainly autoimmune disease, multiple sclerosis and systemic lupus are both linked and associated, not caused by, but associated with low levels of vitamin D. And we see that with a lot of African-American persons who have systemic lupus, because we know that vitamin D is correlated, and oftentimes dark skin blocks the penetration of vitamin D into the body. So I do think of vitamin D as a really wonderful vitamin to replete, but certainly should be taken carefully because it is a fat-soluble vitamin. And when it's a fat-soluble vitamin, it can get stuck in the fat, and you can actually take too much of it if you overdo it. So it's something that should be monitored very carefully, but certainly repleted and made whole in the body and adequate.
And can I just jump in there?
Sure.
Sure. This is a big issue. I am always encouraging people to be sure to include vitamin D, go for optimal ranges. But the big challenge is that for many people, they aren't even getting tested for vitamin D.
Correct.
And hunger.
Right.
Which is just so absurd. One of the most
right.
important tests that could have the greatest influence on mitigating
right.
many conditions is not even routinely used. I know mm-hmm. countries like Australia, you're allowed to get covered with testing once every 3 years for vitamin D.
Right.
And in a severely deficient country. And I'm sure the UK is the same. It's probably even worse. But we're just not covering. We're not.
Right.
People have to fight to get their vitamin D levels tested, even though
right.
it's a really inexpensive test.
Mm-hmm.
So people have to be insistent about getting
right.
their vitamin D, because
yeah.
we need a number, right?
Right. And you need a number, and it's pretty consistent across most labs in this country that the range for normal, which, you know, is arguably can be different amongst different people, of course, but the range in labs is usually 30 to 100. And most patients that I see are in their 20s.
Yeah.
So the question is not only, you know, whether or not or how to get it up to a normal level in the 30s, but really make it more robust and try to get it in the 50s or 60s range. And most physicians, most conventional Western doctors, despite all the wonderful research that's available, really aren't aiming for those levels. They're aiming for sort of, you know, just
low end of
the
reference range.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
And so I think these are things that one should consider talking to their primary care doctor about, their practitioner about, because, you know, you want to understand where your practitioner is coming from, what their goals are, you know, if they have goals about it, and really, you know, what their plan is. So vitamin D is something that is so cheap to fix, and it's so cheap, really, to test for if people can at least get one test a year. It's definitely worth investing in that effort. So that's something I would definitely promote. And another one of the substances that I really think is valuable is fish oil, is omega-3 fish oil. And it's not so much of a detox substance, although there are plenty of good studies, actually, in regards to omega-3 and fish oil helping with various you know, exogenous chemicals from our environment. But what we do, and especially in lupus, there's a wonderful study about how it helps to prevent the development of systemic lupus in many ways. But what I would like to mention about that is that, you know, our our oceans are very, very contaminated at this point. And although we do want wild-caught fish whenever possible because it's less inflammatory than, say, farm-raised fish, and we want wild-caught fish because it eats the algae that's out in the ocean, and that's what gives it its omega, its nutrient substance. And we love fish because it's got protein and a whole host of other nutrient value to human beings. But the problem is that it comes with, you know, whether it's wild-caught, and especially if it's farm-raised, a whole host of chemicals. PCBs and other flame-retardant chemicals that are in water and air that land into the water, and, you know, a whole host of chemicals that are dumped into the ocean. And we really want to think about not only just getting wild-caught fish on a somewhat regular basis. I recommend only once or twice a week, actually. But we want to think about how do we get more of that omega-3 without getting contaminated. And really the only way is with a supplement. And so I do recommend having a good quality fish oil supplement and discussing that with your practitioner, because there are a whole host of bad products out there, and really what you want is a reasonable amount of DHA and EPA substance within that omega-3 product. But really, as as an environmental health person, here I'm weighing out the value of fish, wild-caught fish, with the value of, you know, remaining toxin-free, which I don't think a lot of people think about. They think they're doing right, which is great, with fish eating, but you really want to be careful of what other things you may be contributing to.
Okay. Anything else on that list?
Sure. So basics would be fish oil, vitamin D. Certainly there's other substances. I like to think of, let's see, what are the ones I really like to think? Well, it really depends on the individual, really. But, you know, for instance, foods like pomegranate is a wonderful, you know, it increases glutathione, which is basically the substance in the liver that promotes detoxification. You want to think about pomegranate as wonderful. You want to think about green tea, which has ellagic acid, which is incredibly good, you know, a so strong substance for as an antioxidant. It's a phytonutrient that you get also from berries and blackberries and strawberries, cranberries. All the berries are wonderful. Brassicaceous vegetables, for instance, the kale and broccoli, Brussels sprouts, that family of vegetables are wonderful also for detoxification. Very powerful substances in those vegetables, especially when they are organic and they don't have the chemicals that go along with buying them. And in fact, these vegetables, the brassicaceous vegetables, are wonderful when it comes to, for instance, estrogen and breast cancer prevention, because they really do convert estrogen to a less troublesome form. So the 16:7 is one form of estrogen, and they break it down to a less troublesome form, which is the 16:2. So basically, it's a conversion of estrogen to a less toxic form. So I really do recommend at least one or two cups of broccoli or one of these vegetables per day, in terms of helping the liver make its own glutathione and really embrace the chemical benefits of those vegetables. So those are my big ones. And also there's sulfur-rich vegetables that are wonderful, like mushrooms. Mushrooms are wonderful for detoxification of the liver. So not button cap, which can have some problems in and of themselves, but really all the other mushrooms that are available can be wonderful for detoxification in general.
Well, that's a good list to start from. I'm a big fan of using the cruciferous vegetable family on a daily basis, and I actually work with some specific broccoli seed extract products that are known to help with that detoxification pathway and ensuring estrogen becomes a safe form and eliminated, which I actually, again, through my nutrigenomic testing, see, you know, I think more than 95% of people have impaired ability to detoxify estrogen-like chemicals. So it can turn it into a more dangerous free radical, generating breast cancer or prostate cancer. So it's a really big story, and people really should be incorporating those vegetables or a good supplement into their protocol on a daily basis, you know.
Mm-hmm. And even spices. We have turmeric and curcumin and a wonderful ginger, cinnamon. All of these are very good at sort of lowering the inflammation level of our bodies.
Right. Absolutely. Curcumin is such a big story. Mm-hmm. I think there are 8,000 published studies on the mm-hmm. benefits of curcumin, which are very many. So mm-hmm. Curcumin as a supplement, or just getting, you can get good turmeric root in stores now, you know, so mm-hmm. you can just use it in any, throw it in any dish, which is what I do.
Sure.
You know, you're an expert with autoimmune diseases, which we just see is such a big problem because it's just a growing epidemic. I'd like some of your thoughts about how people can best, well, to understand the origin, what's going on in the body that's generating autoimmune conditions, and some of your thoughts of what we need to be doing in the time we have left. I just think it's a really important
sure.
subject, and since you're such an expert, let's explore that area a little bit.
Okay. Well, you know, our body, you know, has this incredibly articulate way of handling threats evolutionarily, again, you know, in terms of keeping the bad stuff out and when the good, and allowing the good stuff in, the nutrients. And we have this, you know, we have this whole array of means of protecting ourselves. We have liver detox, and kidney has a detox mechanism. But we also have this gut, this bowel that we are just now discovering the miracles of, because on the gut we have over 5 pounds of bacteria that up until very recently we really haven't given much thought to in terms of how it protects us. But I think the science is panning out more and more, and there's wonderful labs trying to show the benefits of these bacteria that live in our gut. And the reason they're valuable is because they actually protect the gut lining. And they keep it quiet and less inflamed if it's a good quality set of bacteria, which we have 100 trillion types of bacteria. And it keeps the gut lining very, very healthy. Now, what are the things that disrupt the lining or the bacteria and then affect the lining? Can be a whole host of chemicals and processed foods and high sodium, high sugar. And so that's the type of antibiotics, of course, which, of course, need to be taken when they're appropriate. But we really do wipe out a lot of the good bacteria with the bad one that we're trying to get rid of technically. So we really want to be very judicious with the use of antibiotics. And this gut microbiome that it's called really does guard us and blocks sort of the immune response by not allowing certain substances across the gastric lining into our bloodstream, which then causes this immune system response. We now know that sodium in processed foods, believe it or not, really can increase certain components of the immune system, such as the T helper cells, Th17 goes up. So we have actual bench research showing that certain substances like sodium at high amounts, and as we see in processed and fast food, really does cause an inflammatory response that can be measured at the cellular level. So we do want to keep our gut in good shape and good health. We want to promote good eating habits, and certainly probiotics are very helpful in the appropriate patients. Probiotics are basically adding bacteria into the gut so that we have that gut fully, you know, covered when it comes to the appropriate ratio and percentage. And we want to limit, again, antibiotics, and we want to limit any chemicals that may irritate the gut. Certainly gluten can be can cause effects on the gut and raise sort of a micro inflammation area, which will again leak some of the inflammatory substances across the bowel lining. So that's where I would start in terms of thinking about protection physiologically. So you want to make sure that your gut is in good health and that you're doing everything you can to sort of keep it in working form.
And what are some of the indications that your gut is not in good health?
Well, you know, this is where testing can be a little tricky. You know, you can measure in the bloodstream certainly various levels of chemicals, which can get quite expensive. You know, certain labs do cover measurement of bisphenol A and styrene and various pesticides. I don't recommend that on a regular basis. I do that with my detoxing with individuals that are appropriate for that kind of testing. But essentially, you can measure things in the bloodstream. You can look at stool samples. And these are pretty much done, you know, routinely in many, integrative and functional medicine practices. But you can also try to just change your diet and see how that manifests itself and how you're feeling. A good friend of mine, Dorothy Mullen from Supper's program, she said, you know, what you eat and how you feel when you eat those foods are data. And I think we really need to think about the data and how we feel when we eat certain foods and how our body responds to them. And I think that's very, very important, and we miss that quite often in discussion with our practitioners.
Yeah, and if people notice that they're having, you know, they're bloated or they have gas or constipated or diarrhea, mm-hmm. those are the first clues, wouldn't you say, that there's a problem?
Yeah, I mean, you have to also look at the big picture as well, stress levels, sleep, your sleep hygiene, you know, manifesting into gut-related issues. So I never look at one part of the body as the sole culprit. I kind of look at the whole picture. How do we fix sleep? How do we make that quality sleep work for better biochemical processes? How do we manage the stress in people's lives? Then also, how can we reduce chemicals in someone's environment? How can we manage medications? Medications are chemicals, and many, you know, there's a great deal of polypharmacy in this country. People on multiple medications for solving different symptoms instead of really going to the heart of some of these, you know, issues. And we lop on, more medications to fix another problem. So I think you have to look holistically at a patient and see where are all the little things we can tweak to make this person feel better overall and get better clarity on whether or not this person has a diagnosable disease or is it a lot of symptomatology going on.
Can you talk a little bit about some of the concerns that we need to know in regards to steroids, which are commonly used for autoimmune
sure.
kind of conditions?
Yeah. Steroids, as both integrative and a Western physician, I walk a very fine line because many of the diseases I deal with, including lupus nephritis, you can't just deal entirely with, you know, a holistic diet and some supplements. You know, people do die with some very serious illnesses. So that being said, you really want to think about how to manage disease effectively and with the least amount of impossible. The greatest inventions that man has ever come up with, you know, since the fact that we needed it from our lifestyle changes. But steroids have kept inflammation down in an acute situation in so many, many, many cases that it's really valuable, steroids, in terms of its use short term. When we talk long term, steroids can have can be a problem to the human body. And so we have to really think about how they affect bone and bone strength, how they affect sleep. They cause weight gain. They can affect, kidney function. So there's a whole host of things that steroids, when taken long-term, can be problematic. But in their short-term use, they can often be life-saving. Certainly reduce pain, certainly reduce inflammation in their function. But that's when you want to take over lifestyle change and really incorporate those things into reducing inflammation and not relying on medication per se.
You know, I just ask that question because I see many people who are, their doctors will routinely put them on steroids and for long periods of time, and then they have to deal with withdrawing off of them, consequences, consequences, how it's deteriorated certain functions. So mm-hmm. This is why it's great to have this conversation, Ellie, because we need to understand more of what's going on. We need to know what our options are. We need to know questions to ask our doctors. And, I think when anyone is dealing with an autoimmune condition, I would really encourage them to go to an integrative medical doctor.
Yeah.
Because you will be given options and safer, natural ways, and as you were saying, address more of the root cause issues rather than
right.
just being prescribed a steroid, which is usually
right.
what is done.
Right, and used for symptomatic relief, which is good acutely, but doesn't really answer the question of what caused the problem to begin with. And that's when you really need to figure out, you know, how this process started instead of just putting a damper onto it temporarily.
So do the chemicals that we get exposed to, which we talked about earlier in this conversation, damage the gut as well? Are they contributing to autoimmune conditions?
Well, steroids, in general, they should not be taken long-term. And I think almost every major body, every guideline would argue that that because of the secondary effects of steroids. Now, individually, again, steroids may be very, very helpful and maybe even life-saving. So acutely, that is something that has to be dealt with on an individual basis. And I manage steroids every single day in my office on how they should be taken, if they should be taken, and how they should be gotten off of. And there's many ways you can do that, certainly even naturally, with even the use of licorice. And, you know, so there's various ways to manage that. You know, grossly overall, steroids, again, I think they're overused. Very much like antibiotics, I think they're overused across the board. But again, they can be life-saving. So I'm very much, you know, torn between bashing all steroids because of the fact that they have saved so many people's lives in a very, very short-term picture. So, you know, again, back to the individual, we're all different genetically, biochemically, behaviorally, our lifestyles are different. So we have to meet everyone where they are and go from there.
Well, I actually was just asking more about the exposure to the chemical exposure early in our conversation, all the different 84,000, 86,000 chemicals. I just want people to understand that exposure to those chemicals could, in fact, be damaging our gut, creating leaky gut, could be causing inflammation in our gut and directly contributing to these more chronic conditions, be it autoimmune or cancer. Is that correct? Can you comment on that?
Well, I want to say that, you know, there's different classes of chemicals, and they all have sort of their own effects. The class, when you put them together and you call a group of them endocrine disruptors, you know, that's very much been shown to do such things as decreasing and manipulating various hormones that are in the human body that are used for a whole bunch of biochemical processes. And steroids is an expression for medications. There's all different types of steroids. There's androgen steroids. There's corticosteroids. So steroids is a kind of a gross terminology for chemicals that really reduce inflammation. Some steroids actually increase and lower blood pressures and affect blood pressure mechanisms. So when you get individualized with different chemicals and what they do, you know, you can get to nuances. But in general, we are having a major onslaught of environmental exposures in general that are affecting the chronic health of humans and our offspring, and especially children we have to be concerned about because their bodies are smaller, their growth rate is exponential, not only in utero, but certainly in the younger years and up until age 18, you can argue. And that being said, we have to be even more concerned about the exposure in children, which starts with the pregnant mother. And that's kind of some of the work I'm doing is trying to go into schools and teach kids and high school students and middle school students sort of, you know, why they should be body aware and why should they think about how much lipsticks or, you know, body personal care products they should be thinking about and how to choose safer ones and whether they should drink diet soda and why that's would be important to think about. And I think when we talk to younger people, we're more likely to see a progressive change moving forward. I've been lecturing to doctors for several years, and really there's not a lot of interest and believe it or not amongst the medical community in regards to this topic. And after 2 or 3 years of lecturing at some of the best institutions in the country, most academic institutions, I felt that the best way to reach the public is really to go right to the schools and to find a way and really work with them in terms of integrating some of this information into the curriculum of public and private high schools. So that's where I am now doing that work with Princeton High School and hopefully getting some funding to do more of this around the country.
Well, we need you, Allie, for all the great work and research you're doing and being such an inspiration. I'd like people to be sure to visit your website, which is thesmarthuman.com.
I didn't mean to cut you off. And my private practice is AllieCohenMD.com, but the work in environmental health is thesmarthuman.com and Facebook and Twitter. And I post every day, you know, tips, recommendations that are safe and practical. Yes, thank you for giving me that plug.
And we look forward to your book when it comes out.
Great, thank you.
So we'll have you back on after I get a hot coffee in my hand. So, first of all, Dr. Ali Cohn, thank you so much for sharing your wisdom and your passion with us. And I want to thank all my listeners for being here today. And I also want to remind everyone before we conclude this show to always honor the wisdom of your feminine self. Bye for now.